village that people come late, and you don't fight it, you just flow with it. So we will do a few things on the fluff side for the first few minutes as we have people arriving. Let me introduce myself to make sure that you are in the right place, and if I get through introducing and you get up and walk out, I will be understanding. I will take your name and license plate, but I will. My name is Ron Burke. I am a program director of Adult Ministries, Lutheran Outdoor and Retreat Ministries of the Southwest, here with a group of citizens of Texas, of various... For those of you who are not on that in-joke, at first I said they were a group of mature people. Some of the immature people got offended at that, and... Then when I referred to them as immature, they were offended at that. I tell you, it's hard to say anything nowadays without offending someone. And I'm doing a series on the lighter side of faith, using traditional Christian methods, part of our heritage, to deal with the stresses, strains, burdens, and crosses of life. We've talked about humor, we've talked about rest. Today we will talk about something else. I've also mentioned a few things about Pontotoc, Texas, which is Texas' equivalent of Lake Wobegon. We do have Minnesotans here. It is even smaller than Lake Wobegon. Pontotoc, Texas, where a family ranch which I inherited is close to. As I mentioned, it's so small that their power plant is a Sears diehard. It is also, to really give you an idea how small Pontotoc is, when I was born on October 24th, the merchants of Pontotoc, both of them, presented my mother and I with various gifts for being the firstborn child of the year. Well, that's a test to see if you are awake this morning. You are. Okay. The people in Pontotoc not only work, they are hard workers, being typical Americans, typical Texans, but they also play. And we are in a rural ranching part of the state of Texas. The people from outside Texas may not realize, but in central Texas, in the hill country of Texas, right where our ranch is located, is the highest concentration of white-tailed deer in the world. We have in our county, for example, approximately one white-tailed deer to every 2 acres. So hunting is a very big, well, it's just a big source of income because we do not have very many places for public hunts. Most of Texas is private land. So for those of us in the ranching and farming business, hunting is a big source of income. And we do that at our ranch, and it's been interesting the last several years. We've had several law enforcement officers who have come out and hunt on our place, a retired United States Marshal, a Dallas homicide detective, the head of the governor's security force in Texas, who is my son's best friend, these and various other people. And you kind of think that law enforcement people should know how to use a gun, right? Well, I learned that is not always the case, because last year we had one of these new, on our place, hunters who was a law enforcement officer, and he was very excited about the possibility of hunting, and he went out and got all dressed up in his camouflage, found him in a very nice place, secluded away in the brush, and he could hear this deer coming, and the closer the deer came, the more he got excited and his heart was palpitating. He had a real good case of buck fever. And finally, this nice big trophy buck comes out into the clearing, and the police officer jumped out and said, "Freeze, police!" The deer was seen, he was getting a speeding ticket going through another county. So you can't always tell about law enforcement officers. Also, the people in that area of the state play by fishing. Fishing is a very popular sport there. And we have a lot of what we call in Texas tanks. In other parts of the country, they are called ponds. These are dirt dams put across a creek or a draw or something that then collect the runoff. And they are a prime source of livestock water. But also, a lot of people stock these with fish. And we've had, up until July, a lot of rain in Texas. One of my neighbors was out one day going around checking all his tanks, and he came up on this one which was full and overflowing, and he was admiring it, and he happened to see this great big old bass up in the shallows feeding on some grass there, and he said, I'm just going to catch that sucker. So he went back to his pickup, and he was a good German, Texas Lutheran, and just happened to have an ice chest in his pickup, which contained, well, among other things. I'm getting ahead of myself here. First of all, he had his, always carried his tackle with him, so he rigged up his tackle and was just getting ready to cast out there and realized he didn't have any bait, so he started looking around. He couldn't see a grasshopper or a cricket or anything that used bait. About that time, though, he sees this little water snake about yay long, and the water snake has a frog in his mouth, so he said, I'll just catch that water snake and take the frog away from him and use him for bait. Well, he catches the water snake very easily, but the water snake will not turn loose of the frog. So then he goes back, and as I said, being a good Texan, had this ice chest full of, as we call it in Texas, German iced tea, and popped the top on a can of Lone Star, which is great Texas tea if you're ever down there, and goes over and pours a little of this. Are we getting feedback from somewhere? Oh, it's up there. Excuse me, in the balcony, we can hear you. And anyway, he poured a little of this Lone Star in the snake's mouth, and immediately the snake turned loose of the frog. The guy grabbed the frog, put it on his hook, cast it out there, and standing there waiting for this big fish to hit, suddenly he feels a little tap down on his boot, and he looks down, and it's the water snake with another frog. Well, we kind of meandered around, but we eventually got to the punchline on that. Well, as I was saying, Pontotoc people are typical Americans. They work, and they play a little, but their lives are really built around work. And I think that is typical American attitude, that most of us are raised in an environment. Excuse me. I feel like a school teacher. Sorry about that. Most of us, as I say, are raised where one of the highest virtues in our society is work. As most of you know, our society has pretty well been built on what we call the Protestant work ethic. And that undoubtedly has affected us in many, many ways in our society. And that whole issue of work in our society is a lot more subtle than I think we are sometimes aware. For example, somebody has pointed out that our schools really, in a very kind of subconscious way, incorporate this idea into our children. To quote an educational periodical says, in the mill of the academy today, we do not grind gerunds, chiefly because most of us cannot remember what gerunds are, yet we still glorify the work spirit. It is not an accident that we regularly speak of home work, work books, work loads, work outs, work shops, work horses, school work, task forces, works of art, work rooms, work sheets, work ups, class work, work schedules, makeup work, board work, remedial work, course work, and committee work. If you really stop and think about the language which we use in our society, the word work regularly appears. And as I say, that has its subtle influence in our society in that we think that work is one of the highest virtues. That old saying, the idle hands are the devil's workshop, which we have mentioned before, is one that is ingrained into us at a very early age. But we should also remember another old saying in our society, and that is, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, or dull Christian, as the subtitle for this presentation goes. So it is my contention, and I think the contention of a lot of other people, that yes, work is important. Yes, work is vital to the success of any society and individuals within a society, but there is also a very proper time for play, for leisure. Now, for the sake of just all of us being on the same page, I'm going to throw out a couple of definitions of play for you to cogitate upon. First of all, what play is not, and this is from Bill Harper, who is a noted authority on recreational play in our society. He says, what play is not? Anything that people are required to do under threat of direct or indirect punishment is not play. If one does something that appears to be play, but is doing it for reasons other than experiencing the joys of the moment, that is not play. Playing for good health, therapy, social acceptance, money, grades, trophies, and publicity is not playful. Something for you to think about. Another definition of play comes from Mark Twain through the mouth of Tom Sawyer. Work consists of whatever a body is obliged to do. Play consists of whatever a body is not obliged to do. And a friend of mine in Austin, by the name of Tom Zimmerman, has combined with Tobin Corot to do a book called The New Game Plan for Recovery, which is in bookstores all across the country. And it's a plan of play for people in the 12 Steps program. And it's has a lot of very thoughtful things about play, and it's one of those books that I would recommend. And they give a couple of definitions in this book. Play is a voluntary activity, with the stress on voluntary, that is at once invigorating and relaxing, challenging and rewarding, unpredictable yet unthreatening, and above all, it is a process we enjoy. One of their definitions. And another definition is that play is an attitude and an experience, not a form or a formula. It is not so much what we do as how we do it. And only you know what feels good to you. So honor that feeling. Some definitions of play for you to put into your mind and play with. Now let's look at play from a spiritual point of view. And one of my favorite spiritual writers is Frederick Buechner, whom I hope you are familiar with. He's got lots of books out. He has a couple of theological dictionaries, which are just fun ways of looking at some of the basics of our faith. And this is from his first of these, called Wishful Thinking. And it is just simply entitled Play. When King David's wife berates him for making a fool of himself by leaping and dancing before the ark of the Lord with all of his might, he protests by saying that it seemed exactly the right thing to do, considering all the Lord had done for him. Therefore will I play before the Lord, he tells her. This is in 2 Samuel. And when God describes how he will rescue Jerusalem from his wrath and make it new again, a city of truth, in Zechariah, He conveys the glory of it by saying, "And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets." And when the psalmist praises God for creating this great and wide sea wherein are creeping things innumerable, he makes special mention of Leviathan, whom he says, "Thou hast made to play therein." And then Buechner says, "The boy and girls, the king, the whale, they are none of them accomplishing anything. They are none of them proving anything. There's nothing edifying or educational or particularly helpful in what they are doing. Nothing that you'd be likely to think of as religious. They haven't a thought in their heads. They're just playing. That's all. They are letting themselves go and having a marvelous time at it. David has sweat pouring down his face and his eyes aflame. The boys and girls are spinning like tops. The whale has just shot a 30-foot spout into the air and is getting ready to heave his entire 150 tons into the air after it. What is the wind doing in the hayfield? What is Niagara Falls up to? Or the surf along the coast of Maine? What about the fire going wild in the belly of a stove? Or the rain pounding on the roof like the Hallelujah chorus? Or the violets on the windowsill leaning toward the sun? What, for that matter, is God up to, getting the whole thing started in the first place, hurling the stars around like rice at a wedding, gathering the waters together like into the seas like a woman gathering shells, calling forth all the creatures of earth and air like a man calling, 'Swing your partner at a hoedown.' Be fruitful and multiply," God calls, and creator and creature both all but lose track of which is which in their wonder of playing. Thoughts from Frederick Buechner. Thoughts on the spiritual aspect of play. And a few quick thoughts on play as recreation or recreation. That's really what that word breaks down into, recreation. And we all know and have learned in our physical education classes the importance of play for our bodies. It builds muscles, it builds coordination. It counteracts all those calories we take in. Play, very obviously, and we hear a lot about this, is good for us physically. It is recreational. It does good things to our body. We also hear a lot about the recreational benefits of play psychologically, what it does to our minds and our bodies. For me and for a lot of other people that I know who are in a stress-filled position, one of the ways to get away from that stress, to put it out of our minds, is to play. That's why some people play golf, why some people go hunting or fishing, as I mentioned, or sit at the bridge table or the 42-table, as the Texans have been doing. Play is a way of relaxing the mind. Of if you're really engrossed in some playful activity, it's awfully hard to remember and worry about the concerns that are in your life. So play has that recreational aspect in our bodies, our minds, and our souls. It does us good physically and psychologically. And also, play is very important in our social health, in our relationships with other people. Plato once said, "You can discover more about a person in an hour of play than you can in a year of conversation." You can learn more about a person in an hour of play than you can in a year of conversation. I play golf. I'm not sure what I am, but I go out and swing clubs at a little ball. And I have discovered that the social aspects of this game are very interesting. That a lot of times I think I know people till I go play golf with them. And then I see a whole side of them that I've never seen before. And also in the relaxed approach to that game, you have a lot of time for conversation. So it's an excellent social kind of place to get to know people. I understand that there are some corporate people who will actually invite a prospective employee to go play golf with them, and the employee thinks that that's, you know, a little perk, and they're really flattered by it, not realizing that it is a part of the interview process, that this whole idea of you can really learn about people through play. So there is that aspect of play and its social relationship. Also, there is a side of play in our social relationships that I think is just caught in a very poetic way by the philosopher George Santayana. A little piece that he wrote goes like this. We don't know whether the kite will fly or not, but as Richie says, we have to find out sometime, so why not now? And besides, the wind is right. So Richie holds it up while I back away, letting the string out through my fingers. First time we try, the kite takes this little loop, a real header, and smacks the ground. Richie says it's okay, so we try again, both running across the lawn. And then Richie lets go, and the kite sort of hangs there for a minute, and then whoosh, takes a run at an elm tree, and back. And then all of a sudden, the kite grabs hold of the wind and steadies. It lifts straight up over the elm tree. It goes straight up, the string humming through my fingers. Richie and I just watch it, not saying anything. I could feel the wind tug at it, trembling, holding, moving steady into the sky. God, it was beautiful. And Richie and I just watch it, not saying anything. That's meaningful to me because my son's name is Richie. I'm not going to elaborate on that. I think good poetry speaks for itself. But as I say, I think play, in whatever form it is for you, for your spouse, for your friends, for your loved ones, is an excellent way to support, increase, strengthen that relationship that you have. Well, those are some thoughts on play. Now, being a firm believer in practicing what I preach, keeping these things in mind, I would like for us to do a couple of little things. And this is not threatening for the immature boys and girls in the crowd. This is play. It's going to be fun. First of all, I would like for you to stand. I know this is going to foul up some knitting and cross-stitch and everything else, but you can play with that this afternoon. At the moment, if you will please stand, what I would like for you to do, and I haven't counted off, I hope this works out, I would like for you to pair with someone that you know, but who is not your spouse or your partner. If you will pair with someone here that you know, and you can move around. We have lots of room to move around. So please, find a partner that you know but is not your spouse. Does anybody not have a partner? Here's a gentleman over here. Here's a lonely person over here. Anybody else? Hold your hand up if you are looking for someone. Irene is looking for someone. Irene. Yeah, it's Irene. Okay, here we go. This does not hold out. You know, if you don't know this person, you will shortly. Has everybody got a partner? Everybody got a partner. Great, it worked out fine. Now we'll see if it works out. The next step, I would like for you to get together with another pair, make a foursome, and do this with a pair that you don't know, or don't know that well. Make a foursome. Do we have foursomes? We've got a fivesome over here. You're supposed to pair up with a group that, with a pair you don't know. So we have four people here who know each other. So if somebody could help them out. Okay, a fivesome will work over here if you'll let. I was afraid we had one left over, but that's all right. Okay, now if you will get where you can kind of sit, and I have permission from the grounds crew to move the chairs around if we put them back. So if you will kind of get off, we've got lots of room, and get your little foursome kind of knee to knee or something so that you can do just a couple of little things together. The first thing I would like for you to do is make sure you know each other. Just exchange names and where you're from. Just no in-depth things, but just kind of so that you know each other by name and where you are from. Okay, you all know each other? We are a little cramped for time today, so I'm not going to give you as much time to do some of these things as we normally would, but I'm trying to give you the feel of what we're doing, and yet at the same time have a little playful activity here and an enjoyable experience. Now what I would like for you to do is determine, first of all, the person who lives furthest away from Holden Village in your group. Who lives furthest away? Figure that out. And when you have that figured out, that person is going to be the person who will start. I'm going to ask you a question. And then as we, in all of this is a very simple little sharing process, but to get the procedure out of the way, the first thing I ask for you to share, that person will start, and then you go around and all the rest of you will go clockwise. That's to your left. We'll go around and all four of you will share. Then when we go to another thing to share, the person who is to the left of this person who started this one, they will start the next one, and then you'll go around and do that each time. Is that simple enough? Everybody understand that? Okay, what I would like for you to share, starting with that person, furthest away from Holden Village, is what is your favorite dessert? We're going to give the whole group about 2 minutes to do this. You share your favorite dessert, then the rest of you do that. And you don't have to go in great detail. Your favorite dessert? Okay, you have about 15 seconds to wrap that question up in your group. About 15 seconds. Starting with the next person, if they will share and then go around the group clockwise, share your favorite spot here at Holden Village. Your favorite spot here at Holden Village. Share that, starting with the person on the left or the person who started before, and go around. Give you a couple of minutes to share that in your group. Favorite spot at Holden Village. About 30 minutes to wrap that up in your group. About 30 seconds. The next item of sharing. And if I cut you off, this gives you something to talk about later on in the day as you see each other. The next question, starting with the next person on the left, is complete the sentence. My idea of a good time is. My idea of a good time is. I'll give you a couple of minutes to share that in your group. 30 seconds to wrap that up. 30 seconds. For the next part of our sharing, I forgot to ask you if you had a writing instrument or a piece of paper to take it with you. If you do have access to that, would you please get it? If not, I have some here, and if I had a couple of able assistants, they could hand these out. You need a piece of paper and a pencil for the next activity. Everybody in the group needs one.
Pencil and paper.
Every person needs a pencil and a sheet of paper, and we have some people here who are going to hand them out. So if you will take those and hand them around to any, if you need pencil or paper, hold your hand up and we will have, you have volunteered to be an usher to share those these over here. If you have access to those, we don't have enough, I think, to go all the way around. We may. You can tear them in half. If you write small, you're all right. Does everybody have something to write with and something to write on? You're not going to write an essay on this, so if you have a hard knee or something, you're all right. You just need a pencil, piece of paper. Everybody got that?
Pencil down there.
Okay. Now what I would like for you to do is remember the person that you were paired with when you came into the group. You remember who that was? Forget them. Now, I would like for you now to pair up with one of the persons from the other pair that came in to your group, preferably the person you know least well. Pair up again. You got it, partner? And we have a threesome over here, so that's all right. Okay, everybody's got a partner? What I would like for you to do now is to turn so that those of you who are partners have your backs to each other. Turn with your back to your present partner. Now, being, and your threesome over here, you can work that out. Being the honest Lutherans that you are, is this difficult? Aren't Lutherans organized and systematic? Okay, everybody, you're to the back with your partner. Okay, now, I don't want you cheating on this. When you turn away, I don't want you looking back at your partner. You have probably seen these people around the village. You've just now had some face-to-face conversation and encounters with these people. We're going to test your powers of observance. What do we got, three over here? How did we get three here and five over here? Okay, we're all right. Okay. What I'd like for you to do now is to write down these five things about your partner. First of all, is your partner wearing glasses? Are they wearing glasses? And contacts don't count. Are they wearing glasses? Yes or no? Wearing glasses. Second thing about your partner, what color are the eyes of your partner? What color eyes is your partner? And this is an easy one just because of the odds. Is your partner right or left-handed? Right or left-handed? Fourth question. How many rings was your partner wearing or is your partner wearing? How many rings do they have on their fingers? If any. How many rings on their fingers? Not what kind, but just how many. And the fifth question and final question about the person you are back-to-back, or persons, when they are back home, not here at Holden Village, but when they are back home and they go to bathe, do they do it in a shower or in a tub? Are they a shower or a tub person, your partner? Well, yeah, I'm not sure you can tell about what they do at home. You can probably tell whether they do either or none here. Okay, now that you have those, turn around and see how well you did. Grade yourself. How many of you got all five? How many of you got all five about your partner? One back here? A couple here? Did you have all five? Raise your hand if you got all five. Everybody raise your hand who got all five. Just two? Just two. She got them all right? I mean, don't be modest. Okay. We had three. How many of you got four right about your partner? Okay, quite a few of you. How many of you got three right about your partner? About the same. How many of you got two right about your partner? A couple. How many of you only got one right about your partner? Anybody? Just one? Anybody didn't get anything right about their partner? Or you don't want to admit it. Okay. Okay, that's kind of, as I say, a little exercise on the power of observance. What I'd like for you to do now is, remember the person you were with now, who's your partner, or some of you have threesomes, if you kind of spread out so you have a little bit, so that you will not be distracted by the others around you. Just the two of you move aside. Understand what I'm saying? We go from foursomes or three. No, the one that you've just been observing, those the two of you. Okay, if you'll just kind of, if you could kind of maybe move over here. What I don't want you listening to the other partners, that's what I'm saying. I want you where you will not be distracted by, just kind of get off by yourselves. So, you know, if you're deaf and your partner, like I am in one ear, you can stay close, but you can be close to each other. Yes. I know his wife. It's all right. And I know you need watching. Okay, everybody got with your partner and you got a little space and so forth. What I would like for you to do now is to share a little bit out of your past. Think back when you were 5 years old, roughly 5 years old. For some of you, that's, well, I won't say that. But think back when you were roughly 5 years old, and how did you play? Share that with each other. I'll give you a couple of minutes to do that. When you were roughly 5 years old, how did you play? How did you play when you were five? We'll give you about one more minute. If the other person has not had a chance, give them a chance. About one more minute to share how you played when you were five. Again, I'm probably going to cut you off before you are through, but we do have certain time constraints here. This hopefully will be seed for further conversations during the day, and if you want to do this kind of thing back where you come from, you can allow more time, but we do have some time restrictions here which we want to honor. The second thing I want you to share with each other, and let the person who started first last time, let the other person start this time. Think back when you were 18 years old or a senior in high school, roughly that age, doesn't have to be exact, 18 or a senior in high school, how did you play? How did you play at that stage in your life? Share that with each other. Next stage. Y'all are getting wrapped up in this. Next, right now in your life, at this stage in your life, how do you play? Right now in your life, how do you play? Share that with each other. About one more minute to wrap that up. Okay, that's enough playtime. Who says I am not a leader? I can get people to just do all kinds of things. If you'd kind of come back to where you were originally, kind of appreciate it. If you will, we could do that at the end. We do need to put the chairs back where they were, but don't do that right now. We're, again, watching the clock. We can do that afterwards. And also, you can return your pencils and papers in just a moment. But just return your places to your places at the moment. We'll tidy things up in good Lutheran fashion in a moment. If you'll just... You bet I will. If you'll just sit down, we'll take care of your pencils and chairs and everything in a moment. What did you learn about yourself and your attitude towards play in this little playful exercise? Anybody? Did you find out something about yourself and play?
I found out I really miss it because when you said, how do you play today?
You miss it.
Everything was in the past.
Everything was in the past. Yes?
I had a different.
You had a different?
It was like I didn't get this period of, like, I can't.
Okay, you didn't play or had a stage where you didn't play and now you're playing again. Okay, that's what you found out about yourself, okay? You still like to do the things that you did when you were five. Do you do them? Good for you. Good for you. Yes.
Well, I found out that I had more fun now than I did when I was playing.
You're having more fun now than when you were playing. Volunteer work for you is enjoyable. Would you call it play?
Well, yeah.
Okay. If you enjoy it, it could be play. Okay. Remember some of the definitions which we shared with you about play that really you define what is play in your life, and the main definition of play is enjoyment. Enjoyment. So the definition of play will vary greatly from person to person. If you were with me last night, when we were talking about rest, I said, for me, rest is going to our ranch and doing physical labor. That's really play for me. For a lot of people, that's work. But for me, it's play to a certain limit. Then when it starts becoming work, I quit and come back and do it later. But really, play varies greatly. What one person's work is another person's play, and vice versa. So you can say that. Anything else that you discovered about yourself and play? It was fun to see what other people did. Okay? So you played and enjoyed listening to other people. Okay? Anything else? Yes? Retirement is play? Okay, so for you, volunteer work would be the contrast to play, that you need to keep play clearly defined as play. Okay. It's not play like it is for Charles' particular definition. If it was work, you wouldn't be doing it, okay? Okay, when volunteer, okay, when it got to be stressful, you backed off from it, okay? Okay, we have another gentleman to share. Everything that you enjoyed eating, you felt guilty about. Does that sound like American ways? Okay. If I may just, that brings to mind, there's a little book, I saw it in the bookstore over here, which if I'd have thought, I'd have asked them to get more copies, but it's been very helpful to me. It's called Healthy Pleasures. Healthy Pleasures. And it is the theory of these, I think it's a psychologist, they're medical people, and they've done a lot of research on this, and it is their theory that a lot of the old myths that we have, you know, that if you're in, I think we had this in the church for a long time. I was kind of raised with this, that if you are enjoying yourself, that is the surest sign it's a sin. You know? I was raised not in a Lutheran church, but in a very fundamentalist community and background where that was the surest sign to define sin. If you enjoyed it, it was sinful. If you didn't enjoy it, it was good. Well, these people say, hey, that's not particularly right. You could look at what is, you know, that's what pain is in our body system for, to show that something's wrong. And I think I can say that that is their general theory, that if you're enjoying something, if it feels good, it's probably good. And they go into this in quite detail, and I just really like to hear that. So that is just a thought here that... Any other thoughts? I get distracted easily. Okay.
Well,
yes. You're having more fun now than when you were 18. Okay. I'm not sure you heard all that, but basically...
and I got married when I was 18.
You got married when you were 18, and that took all the fun out of being 18. She was basically saying she's having more fun now than she did when she was 18, because that was during the war and a lot of other circumstances. It was kind of tough times, and now it's easy time, and that varies for people. I think all of us have good times and bad times. Life is a series of valleys and mountaintops. There's no question about it. And when those occur, there's no formula for that. For some of us, we have a very happy childhood and memories. Others have horrible memories of childhood. The same way with youth.